I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead here again to have another conversation with you about some of the stories that matter. Folks, we are continuing to celebrate 28 days of blackness, of black excellence, of black brilliance, 28 days of focusing on black folk. It is the glorious moment of the year when we stop, we consider, we think about, we recognize, we realize, we amplify, we uplift, and we focus on the contributions that black folks have made to this country. Now, we like to do that every day here on WEAA, which stands for We Educate African Americans and Anyone Else Who's Listening. I always throw in that last part. We like to do that every day here at Morgan State University and HBCU. We like to do that as often as possible, but America and the world does it in February. So we recognize that, and we recognize the brilliance of Dr. Carter G. Woodson, who back in 1926 launched Negro History Week, which grew by 1976 to Black History Month. So we want to lift that up this month. We have been counting down every day, focusing on what I call the hard questions, the big ones, the serious ones, the ones that cause us to think about who we are in this country and who we want to be. Who are we as black folks in this country at this moment? And we know that part of the challenge is we live in a world where we're in the midst of a twindemic. We have both the impact of racism and white supremacy and poverty, and we have the global pandemic. And so in an answer to that question, what we're doing here on Today with Dr. K, every Tuesday, we have our COVID vaccination hesitation conversation series. Every single Tuesday, we talk to doctors trying to answer the questions you have about the COVID vaccine. The way it stands at this moment, there are only two COVID vaccines in this country, Moderna and Pfizer. Think about that. Because if I asked you what's the name of the company that gave you your flu vaccine, I don't think you would know it. Who gave your son their MMR? Where'd your daughter get her HPV vaccine from? You wouldn't know. But because we're so involved with COVID-19, we know the companies. We know Moderna. We know Pfizer. Those are the only two. And both of those require two doses. Now, most people, if you're going to a large-scale facility, you're getting the Pfizer because Pfizer has to be stored at a certain temperature. They can't do that type of storage at, say, a Walgreens or a Giant or a CVS. If you're going to one of those places, then you get the Moderna. Interesting, the Moderna, you need 28 days between the two shots. Pfizer is 21 days. You actually get slightly higher dose of medicine with the Moderna. Like, I asked all of these questions on Sunday when I went and I got my first dose of the vaccine. I've been looking and looking and looking and looking and looking. You know that. My parents are fully vaccinated. They're in South Carolina. My husband is a principal and he's fully vaccinated. He's here in Maryland with me. And now I am half vaccinated, where I am standing by for the next 28 days to go and get my second shot. We're not telling you what to do. We're trying to get the information for you. Because as we look at the research, the lowest community to get vaccinated is the African American community for a variety of reasons. Some of that is because we are hesitant because of the history of medical racism in this country. I get it. Tuskegee, I get it. Henrietta Lacks, I get it. More black women are dying during childbirth right now than during the latter half of slavery. I get it. Doctors not believing black folks when we say we're in pain. I get it. The second reason is because it seems to have become racialized in terms of where vaccine distributions happen. If we look at just the data from Maryland alone, more vaccines in Baltimore City, even though you would expect to have more vaccines in Baltimore City because we're 60% African American, and yet we have the lowest percentage of people who are getting vaccinated. That's why we have this vaccination hesitation conversation series. We want to answer the questions that you have about COVID-19. I think it's interesting because I asked this question, hey, if everybody gets vaccinated but black folks, so the whole world gets vaccinated but us, what happens to us? I'm just wondering. Are you really prepared? And I asked my sister this question, so I feel comfortable asking you. Are you really prepared to be in the house from now until the end? Right? Because that's where we stand. This whole idea of herd immunity that they've been talking about, according to Fauci, now you need like, what, 90% of the population or something before we have herd immunity. Are you prepared to continue to homeschool your children? Remember, in short order, it's not going to be your child is learning from home with their teacher. In short order, they're going to have students back in school, and you're either going to be alongside your child in front of their teacher who's in school with other children, or you're going to be homeschooling. What's your plan? At what point do you allow your children to make their own decision? For me, that's when they get 18. So 18 and under, that's a decision for us. Dr. Fauci said he wants children as young as 6 to start getting vaccinated. In September is when they said they'll be ready. You're the parent. Talking about the open back up society. They want to get everybody vaccinated. We want to hear your concerns about the vaccination. Some of you say, hey, it moved too fast for me. I'm sorry, it moved way too quickly for me. Most vaccinations, as everyone says, take 4 to 16 years. How did this one take such a short period of time? Well, one reason is that they had already been working on a vaccine for coronavirus. And that when COVID-19 hit, there was just an adjustment that was made. Some people are saying, well, we don't believe that they're going to give us the same vaccine that they gave Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. They're going to put something in. And okay, we have medical racism. That makes sense. The question you have to ask yourself, do you or don't you? Will you or won't you? And if you won't, then what's your plan? What's your plan? Because even with the COVID vaccination, you can still catch COVID-19. And people get surprised about that. It doesn't stop you from getting COVID-19. Neither does the flu vaccine. The whole purpose of the flu vaccine is to be able to reduce the severity of the impact of the flu if you get it. It's just reducing the severity. It's not keeping you from getting the flu. The MMR vaccine does not keep you from getting measles, mumps, rubella. It jumpstarts your system to be able to fight it off. It doesn't keep you from getting chickenpox. It doesn't keep you from getting polio. It doesn't keep you from getting measles. None of that. It jumpstarts your immune system. You build up. You should be able to fight it off. And if you do get it, the impact is not as severe of what would happen if you don't have the vaccine. If you have elderly parents or grandparents, what's your plan for them? COVID-19 is wiping out the elderly population. The next biggest group that's being hit in terms of deaths from COVID-19 are African-American men and women and people between the ages of 40 to 50. They said we're losing a generation of black moms and dads. I know someone personally who went to church with me growing up who just had a double funeral this weekend for her grandmother and her mother. Both of them died from COVID-19. Where do you stand on this? Not fear tactics, just trying to get you the information. We start our COVID vaccination hesitation series at 3:30, and I want to hear from you. Like, you know, where do you stand on this? What do you think about? How are you with this? Because we want to use this show as a vehicle to address the vaccine hesitancy and mistrust among black Americans. Like, black folks, I get it. Let's talk about it. Additionally, for day number 16 of 28 days of black excellence, tonight, we have our first annual Black Coffee House. That's taking place tonight on Zoom. And if you haven't sent me an email yet, you only have a few more hours because 8 o'clock, we're kicking this thing off. We are so excited. Music, fun, games. Grab your cup of coffee. Grab your family if you like and come and play Blackopoly and let's build a community together. Let's be alone in our houses together. It's the first annual Black Coffee House celebration. And the first question we're asking and we're wrestling with tonight, are you Black or are you African American? That's the question that's on the table for the Black Coffee House. Send us an email to Today with Dr. K, and that's Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y-E, todaywithdrk@gmail.com. Put a header in there, Black Coffee House. We will make sure that we send you the link before 8 o'clock tonight. And then on Saturday, my last announcement, on Saturday, I'm calling all the members of my Itty Bitty Fan Club for our Black History Month celebration. We're going to write poetry. We're going to sing songs. We're going to hang out. I'm going to read to you and talk about Black history in all different ways, shape, and form. But your adult person has to send me an email. Today with Dr. K, same email address, todaywithdrk@gmail.com. In the subject line, just put itty bitty. And you do that, and I will send you the Zoom link so you can join me on Saturday from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. or tonight from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. So, now that we have the business of the show out of the way, I want to take a moment before we go into our COVID vaccination hesitation series and talk about the impact of this COVID-19 virus on the Black community. There are a number of racial disparities in healthcare, and we're watching as those racial disparities show up with COVID-19. The underlying health conditions that COVID-19 seems to thrive, rule, abide, and reign in are underlying conditions that disproportionately impact our community. There's also a very real fear around the maternal mortality rate for Black women. It's 2.5 times higher than that of white women, which means that we are more likely, 2.5 times more likely to die during childbirth than white women. Research also shows that physicians are less likely to prescribe pain medication to Black patients compared to any other race or ethnic group. For some reason, there's a feeling that we're not honest about our pain, that we're not in touch with our body. We don't know what it's like to be in pain. So if I say I'm in pain and you ask me scale of 1 to 10, I say I'm a 7. Doctors think I'm probably a 4. And I'm just lying to get drugs to say 7 when I'm not. So doctors are less likely to prescribe pain medication. There's also a perception that Black people have thicker skin than our white counterparts. So what that means is that what might hurt a white person doesn't hurt us. That we can break our leg and we're not really in pain because our skin is thicker. And because of that, when it comes to equitable treatment, it doesn't exist. It's this inequity in the medical field that shows up as racial apartheid and racial racism. Let me tell you what I mean by that. Black folks tend to have longer wait times when we go to the hospital, when we go to the emergency room. The assumption is that we're not that far along, that we're not really in pain. We're not informed about different options of care. There's less communication. I don't mean being told what to do, but having an opportunity to talk with the doctor about treatment plans. That the sense is we need to be told rather than to be counseled. There's a big difference. There are barriers that exist, too, within the healthcare system and the structures, including academia. The teaching that Black folks have thicker skin is something that should have gone, by the way, a long time ago. We still should not be having this conversation about the racial disparities among medical students that are simply being taught and being built upon. We understand that the medical field has contributed horrific acts of violence to the genetic emotional, psychological makeup of Black folks in this country? Is the medical field open to having these honest and candid conversations? Like, let's just put it on the table. And even though there's a feeling that things have changed, Dr. Susan Moore, the Black woman who told the doctor she wasn't feeling well, complained to the doctor about how she was doing, the doctors wouldn't let her in to her own hospital where she was a doctor, who ended up dying of COVID-19 after doctors, her colleagues, failed to treat her. One doctor who knew her accused her of saying she was in pain just to get drugs. She's like, you know me. She documented this in real time on Facebook about her experience. So there's some part of this, a lot of parts of this, that are concerning. I mean, I have my own experience. I know what it's like to feel like you have to fight to get treated. You have to fight to be seen. I don't mean be in the same room with the doctors, right? The fight for them to see you as human, as being worthy of care, to see that you're being vulnerable because you're in pain, to have them assume your best intentions, that you're not there to take advantage of the system, that if you had your way, you would not be in the emergency room. It's the lack of access to decent health care that ends up with Black folks using the emergency room like a primary care physician. People don't want to go to the emergency room, but if you don't have decent health care, then you don't have a PCP. You don't have a primary care physician. So every time something hurts, you end up going to the emergency room. And with the racial disparities in place, you end up waiting a much longer. I've been there. I've been to the emergency room, sick as all get up, in pain, doubled over. And I remember sitting there telling my husband, you're going to have to scream for them to see me, because I don't think they see me. They know that I am here, but I don't think they see me. All of this leads to a hesitation with taking the COVID-19 vaccination. I get it. Except we're at a point now where if we don't do something, if we don't take a stand, if we don't make the decision that would work for our families and our own lives, then we are going to find ourselves left behind. The world is quickly becoming those that are vaccinated and those that are not. I mean, it's just so sad that this is where we are, because they're trying to bring more equity into the vaccination. Except when they open up to offer the vaccination, what they have found, and don't get offended if I'm talking about you, what they have found is that white folks from other places get in the line. They're jumping the line. So they may open up a clinic in Harlem, open up a clinic in an economically challenged neighborhood, but then you have folks coming who are economically advantaged, who are showing up, in some cases, willing to pay. I heard that myself when I was waiting for my vaccine. There was a person there, not of color, asking about the vaccination. He said he could not get an appointment. I then heard him say to the pharmacist, look, I don't have an appointment, but I do have money. How much do I need to pay to get a shot? Now, the pharmacist, to their credit, said, no, that's not how it's done. You need to go back home, sir, and you need to go online and wait until it's opened back up. But I did some investigation. That's not unusual that people are willing to pay. There's celebrities who've offered $25,000 to doctors for the COVID vaccine. The place in Harlem that was specifically for the folks of that community, it was an economically challenged Hispanic community, and they had whites coming down from Manhattan, jamming the line, getting all the vaccinations. The racial disparities, if we don't do something about it, if we don't hurry up and make our choice about what we're going to do, then we are going to be left behind. When we come back from break, I'm speaking to Dr. Purnell, Black woman doctor, about the COVID vaccination hesitation conversation series. And then after Dr. Purnell, I'm also on tap to speak to Dr. Corey, another Black woman who has been raising the alarm about health equity and fighting for the eliminations of health disparities. She said she was targeted. She said she understands about bias and racism in medicine. She said she was suspended and ultimately terminated. All of this is part of her story that she is going to tell us in the second half of the show. Folks, we have a lot to unpack today. It is Tuesday. It's time for our COVID-19 vaccination hesitation conversation series. Stay with us after the break for more information.
Now for the Vaccination Hesitation Conversation Series, a series to deal with community concerns about taking the COVID-19 vaccination. If you have decided not to get the vaccination and you want to share your concerns, email them to todaywithdrk@gmail.com. WEAA, absolutely the voice of the community.
Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. I'm joined now by Dr. Tangela Purnell, an epidemiologist and health services researcher. She's an assistant professor of cardiovascular disease and clinical epidemiology at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Dr. Purnell, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
We are in the middle of our COVID vaccination hesitation conversation series. Where we stand now is we've been trying to bring our listeners as much information as possible about COVID-19. And now that we are at the vaccination stage, we want our listeners to be as prepared as possible to make an informed decision about where they stand with the vaccine. I want to begin by sharing some of the questions from our listeners who have either left us a comment or they have emailed their comment to Justina.Pollard, P-O-L-L-A-R-D, @yahoo.com. These are all anonymous questions. So folks, you still have time to get your questions in for our next doctor. So the first question I want to put out to you is that people are concerned that this is not yet an approved FDA vaccination, even Moderna or Pfizer. They all have this emergency approval, but they haven't gone through the final approval process. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So thank you. And also thank you for doing this. It is so important that we get trusted information into the hands and the ears of our listeners from trusted sources. And so, you know, first, just a little bit about the emergency use authorization, which is what we know that both the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines used in terms of FDA approval. And so this is essentially something that would happen, for example, in the midst of a pandemic, when we really have a very serious or life-threatening disease or condition that really threatens our country. This is a process of approval that, you know, has been used so that we can sort of get things into the hands of society in a more timely manner. But that's not to say that the process of developing these vaccines started and stopped in 2020. Actually, the process of using messenger RNA, which is sort of what was used to develop both of these vaccines, this is something that has been around for at least 10 years or longer. And scientists at the National Institutes of Health have perfected this method over a very long time. So while we don't necessarily, have 10 years of data saying that the actual process being used specifically for this novel coronavirus vaccine necessarily came, you know, over decades of research, but the process of developing vaccines like this, mm-hmm. we know that this is building off of decades of scientific research.
And I think that's something that scares people in thinking about it. There's now a battle ground that's taking place over the newest vaccines, right? So I'm thinking about Johnson & Johnson, which hasn't mm-hmm. yet been received an approval, although Mayor Brandon Scott is looking to get them in Baltimore. I know America has ordered, I believe, 300 million doses of it. And I think about AstraZeneca, which, you know, stopped their trials in South Africa. So it feels like you have all of these different types of vaccination. I know Moderna and Pfizer are the ones that people are most familiar with. Can you talk about the two new ones that are coming on the market?
Well, you know, so with the Johnson & Johnson one, we know that as of right now, I believe in the trials with just one dose has been shown to be about 65% effective. And I know that there are some trials now that are also testing, you know, both doses to see what will happen. And the same with, you know, as you mentioned, the trial that was just stopped in South Africa. And so I think that just like when we think about other conditions, for example, diabetes, right? We have so many different types of medication. We know that each of these different types of medication work in slightly different ways, and they each had to go through a pre-approval process. They had to go through the trial phase to make sure that the benefits outweighed the risk and the harm, that there weren't going to be very severe and adverse reactions that will disproportionately outweigh the potential benefits of that particular treatment. And so that's the same thing that we're going through right now with our vaccines. And that's what you want to happen. Okay. You want us to have a process where we are vetting these different vaccines, just like we would vet any other treatment. We know that in these trials, you know, most of the time, these are people who, you know, may or may not be representative of every single person who will later get access to it. But what you want is you want a diversity of people who are willing to sort of step up and participate in these trials so that we would then have more information to use, because what they are essentially reporting to us is sort of what happened on average among the people who participated in these trials. And so the more information that we get, you know, from, you know, one day you may hear that, oh, this seems to be going well, and now the trial was stopped, or this or that. That doesn't mean that the scientific process is failing. It actually means that it's working and that our checks and balances are working. With each of these trials and with each of our major scientific studies, we have what's called a data safety and monitoring board. And that means there are a group of scientists who understand what's going on in the background, understand what the potential risk and benefit should be. And if at any point they feel that the risks are outweighing the benefits, that's when you see something like this sort of happening, where you may stop a trial because they want to make sure that we are protecting even the people who are participating in those trials. So this is, you know, just sort of how the process works. And that's what we want. We want transparency, and we want checks and balances to make sure that we are safe.
Now, one listener sent in a question. I think it's indicative where a lot of people may stand with this, particularly out of the African-American community. The listener writes, I have huge issues with medical distrust with the Tuskegee experiment and Henrietta Lacks. Yeah. Why should I trust science now when we have been lied to before? And before I answer, I have to answer that, I just want to let people know, our listeners, that you are an African-American woman. And so I think people have to understand that perspective is important. Where you stand does shape how you enter into this question.
Absolutely. And let me also, you know, just preface this by saying that I in no way, and this is sort of how you earn the trust of the community, by always making sure that you let people know, I'm not here on behalf of, you know, my employer. I'm not here on behalf of any pharmaceutical company. I am here as an African-American woman who decided to devote her entire career to rectifying the health disparities that disproportionately impact other African-American communities. Part of this was driven by, you know, what I saw in my own community growing up in the Mississippi Delta, which, if any of you, you know anything about public health and mistrust and, you know, health disparities and being lied to, you can know for certain that I understand what that means. And with that being said, what I will say, so a friend of mine, so I often speak with, you know, like many of us, did we talk with our girlfriends about what's been happening in the news or just what was the latest information? And so a friend of mine, just, you know, about a week or so ago, we were talking about this whole issue around Tuskegee and distrust and sort of what that means in terms of the COVID vaccine and the trials. So now that we've moved out of the trial phase and we really are in the phase of, you know, vast dissemination of the vaccine, one thing that she pointed out that I thought was an excellent point was that if this was the exact same scenario, meaning, so we have to be reminded sometimes that what happened with the Tuskegee study was not that men were being injected with syphilis. What was happening was that once a treatment was discovered, that was withheld from them because, you know, the scientists wanted to study the natural progression of the disease. Now, the equivalent to that today would be, if the vaccines were being withheld from us after, you know, first studying us to develop the vaccine. That would be the equivalent. Not saying that, you know, you see people who, you know, look like us and others being sort of on TVs and radios and saying, hey, I signed up. You need to go sign up. This is our best protection. If this really was the same, it would be the opposite. It would be everybody else getting access to the vaccine, and we're not. Another thing that an older family member of mine once pointed out was by saying, you don't need to, and I'm sure this is not appropriate for me to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. What she did was say, look at who's getting the vaccines. Look at who's lining up to get the vaccines. And that should tell you all you need to know about whether or not you need to be in line also trying to get the vaccine. So it'll be different if you didn't see anybody, you know, wanting to sign up and go and get these vaccines and, you know, and get them into the hands of their family members. That's not what we're seeing. What we're seeing is a mad dash in certain communities to go and get it. And then, you know, other communities are being left behind. So pay attention to what that means. That means that in general, we should be making sure that we are also getting in line and making sure our family members and others are getting in line for this, because clearly there is a recognized benefit. And so I don't know if that helps, but, you know, those are some things to sort of keep in mind. The other thing, and that, you know, you can look up very easily, there was this really interesting news story about descendants of participants in the Tuskegee study who basically said, I understand the distrust. I understand more than most. And I still plan to get in line for this vaccine. And so, you know, I encourage your listeners to go also and listen to their interviews and their reasons behind why they're saying, you know, this is sort of our best chance and making sure that we are safe, especially when this virus, as we know, has hit our community much harder than most other communities. So does that help in any way?
I want to have you kind of break that down, because we hear all the time, and I say it often on my show, it disproportionately impacts the African-American community. We're 3 to 4 times more likely to go to the hospital, twice as likely to die. Black men get it more. I mean, Black women get it more, but Black men die from it more. And I've said it so much, people are like, you're lying to us. It just doesn't sound right. What does that really mean? So as an epidemiologist, can you talk about how there's truth behind what is being given to us, this information in particular?
You know, let me tell you. So I was doing an interview with a reporter a few months ago who said that his company had done a survey, and that among the participants, those who were self-identified as white were much less likely to say that they were very concerned about COVID, whereas those who were Black or African-American were much more likely to say that they were concerned. And he said, I don't understand, you know, the results of this survey, what could be explaining this? And I asked him, you know, simple questions, in which, you know, I challenged your listeners to do the same. How many of you know a person who has died personally from COVID? How many of you have had family members who have either been infected with COVID or severely ill or, you know, perhaps have died? How many of you have people that you know and love who may have died from other causes during this pandemic? That means you know how it feels to have to go and have a graveside funeral for someone that you love. You know how it feels perhaps to not even be able to travel and go home at all for those of us who live in other states. So what these numbers are essentially, you know, the stories behind the numbers, because as you correctly alluded to, saying 3 to 4 times more likely or people don't get that. But what it means is that people who look like us, who have many of the same day-to-day experiences that we have, are much more likely to end up contracting COVID-19, for getting severely sick if we contract it, and or possibly dying as well. And that means that there are many more funerals in our community. There are many more hospitalizations. And I'm sure many of you know that these COVID protocols within hospitals are not anything very warm and fuzzy. You know, we've had family members during this pandemic, and we did not get a chance to say goodbye. that is not okay. These are not things that you just easily get over. And so what we're trying to tell you right now is that if we have any shot, any chance at avoiding this type of pain that could be inflicted upon ourselves or that could be inflicted upon our family members, then we need to try and just do what is in our best interest to avoid that. It's not fun to know that you have a family member who's lying in a hospital dying and you cannot say goodbye. And it's not fun to not be able to have a proper farewell for family members who have lived on this earth, you know, 80, 90 years, and that you cannot properly bury them. If this is our only shot at getting back at some level of normalcy, then we have an obligation to try and take that shot.
Another listener wrote, what's the point of me taking the COVID-19 vaccine if there's still a chance I might contract COVID-19 in the future?
Well, you know, that's always the chance with anything, right? With any vaccine that we take. When we think about, you know, all of the vaccines that we take our children for those wellness checks, with each of those, there's not a 100% chance that they won't contract polio and all of the different viruses. But what it means is that if enough of us get that vaccine, the likelihood of that happening diminishes greatly. And that's sort of the same thing that's going on with COVID. But then they're also reporting that even among those who may have contracted the virus after receiving both doses of the vaccine, there have been some reports that it may be a much milder version than you would have contracted had you not gotten the vaccine. So, you know, we're still learning as much as we can, but what we do know, especially with the concept of herd immunity and other, you know, sort of Epi 101 methods, is that, you know, if we get enough of us vaccinated and, you know, really taking the precautions that we need, then that's going to be our only chance of really, you know, bringing down the risk of contracting this virus.
Now, a listener reached out to me with a concern, and their biggest concern is that they don't want to, you know, end up 20 years from now and hear that commercial. If you were vaccinated, 20 years, you might be entitled to a settlement. Like, that is,
yeah, no, that's real. You know, that is real. And I'm trying to think of a diplomatic answer without sounding dismissive. I am a native Southerner, so, you know, we're kind of pretty direct. What I will just say off the top of my head is that I hope, you know, and I'll tell you, I've gotten my first dose. I'm preparing to get my second dose in another week or so. And I'm still praying every night, just like all the rest of us, that all will be well. But what I have to say, you know, about that, and this is the advice I would give my mom, my sister, those I love, is that I would rather take a chance and be here 20 years from now versus not being here 20 years from now because of shoulda, coulda, wouldas, you know? So, you know, what we know that with every other treatment, every other drug, every other vaccine, there will be new things that we learn down the road. But guess who will be learning those things down the road? The people who are still alive to learn those things down the road. And if what we're telling you is that people who look like you and I are much less likely to survive if we catch COVID, or much more likely to contract it now, then if what we're saying is that the vaccine for now is the best shot that we have of still being here 20 years later, then just personally, I think that that is probably something that would help me with my own decision-making about it.
Now, I'm a Southern girl, too, from South Carolina.
All right, let's do it.
I'm telling you, there's a lot you just said in your eyes. I said, uh-oh.
You know, and you stop and you pause because you're like, well, I don't know, you know, living here in Maryland, even though Maryland is not like truly the North, but it's not, you know, the Deep South either. So, you know, you always get told, well, you know, don't say it that way. Go and say it another way. But I like to say it to people in the language that we speak, right? Sometimes I like to put all the PC stuff to the side. And as I mentioned, when I'm having these conversations with my family members, I throw all the PC out of the window, you know, and we talk. So I hope that you'll give me a little bit of grace today and we can talk today.
Absolutely. Well, I often say on my show that there are conversations that I have that are for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are conversations where I'm talking to my people.
Yep.
And right now we're trying to save my community. When it talks about, because it's not just about the not taking of the vaccine, because the research shows that Black folks are saying, okay, we will take the vaccine. It's the wait and see around it. That's what I want to have you talk about, because the whole idea, well, let me wait a little while and see what happens. I'm not sure if you have time to do that.
You may not get, you know, that may be your one call or your one chance to sign up. And I'm not saying that as a scare tactic. And I'll tell you, I don't go around preaching and telling other people what to do. That's just not my personality. I think we should all, you know, use our best judgment and pray or meditate or whatever it is that helps us with our individual decision making. But what I can tell you is what I've seen with my own eyes, you know, with some of my own family members, mm-hmm. where, you know, there have been, you know, announcements saying you can now sign up, you know, for the vaccines. And those who immediately went to sign up were able to get on a list and at least get that first dose and get a second dose scheduled. Whereas those who waited even 2 days were basically told you have to try again in 3 weeks because we've already, mm-hmm. you know, given out all of the vaccines that we have to allocate right now. And in some states, you know, what they are also saying is that if that particular area starts to run low on the supply of vaccines or start to run out, they may prioritize those who already have at least one dose before they offer, you know, a new dose to someone who doesn't have any doses. So all of that, you know, is reasons, you know, why we need to try and, you know, just really jump on it if we have a chance to try and get access to this vaccine.
A listener wanted to know, what is the difference between the two doses? And I thought that was a good question, given the fact that I've seen places and I've heard that they've canceled the second dose because they didn't get all the doses in. What's the difference between the two?
So that's a, you know, that's a really great question. And that's something, you know, a lot of people want to know about. I will let you know that in terms of the actual trials that were conducted and the studies and the reported 95% effectiveness or efficacy, et cetera, that was based on the two doses. And that's sort of what the recommendation is, that we need both of those doses. And some of the earlier studies that only used one dose, basically what they found was that after a few weeks, the immune reaction to it became much weaker over time, meaning that, you know, we may not have the full protection if we only get one dose versus the two. There may be, you know, some additional studies ongoing. I'm not aware, but what I do know is that the numbers that are being reported in terms of how effective these vaccines are based upon both of those doses. And that's the recommendation that scientists are giving, that people need both doses. And so I do hope that any areas that are not, you know, giving out both doses will soon rectify that, because that is what the guidelines indicate to be most effective.
Now, one listener wrote in, and I think the question that the listener have is what many parents have right now. Mm. And so the listener wrote, I'm nervous about my child taking the vaccine. She is only 10 years old. What should I do? And expand that, because really what we're talking about is the under 16 crowd, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's it. You know, exactly what I was going to say, that, you know, unfortunately right now it's not even available for children that young. As you alluded to, the Pfizer a vaccine has been approved for age 16 and older, whereas the Moderna one is still 18 and older. There are some new trials that are going on right now that is starting to enroll younger children. And we are, you know, closely watching what's happening with those numbers. Again, making sure that the benefits outweigh the risk for all age groups. And so I believe the latest thing that I heard was from one of the experts at the CDC, indicating that, you know, he hopes that this is something that may become available later in the calendar year versus earlier, because right now many of those trials are really just starting up for those children who are younger than the age of 16. So I think that as of right now, the best way for us to, you know, still keep our children safe would be to follow many of those same guidelines that all of us, you know, were following last year and even should be continuing to follow now, right? Wearing our mask, washing our hands, keeping a safe distance, staying at home, you know, doing things to protect ourselves are, you know, as of right now, is still the best way to protect our babies.
I want to pull two questions together from two listeners, because I think they fall in kind of the same area. One listener wanted to know, if I have allergies, can I still take the vaccine? And another listener asked, well, I'm 3 months pregnant, how about me? So kind of two conditions, but I mean, pregnancy, I'm just putting in that category.
That's great. And I will say, you know, in both cases, speak to, you know, your own primary care providers. In every case, you know, speak to the people that you trust to keep you alive, because that's exactly what I did. You know, I spoke to my own doctors and made sure, you know, even with my own, you know, personal situation, is this the best for me? Got the green light and moved forward. But I will say, in terms of allergies, I'm not aware of just, if you mean seasonal allergies, I'm not aware of any recommendations against getting it for just normal seasonal allergies. Now, if you have specific allergies to, you know, anything that may be included within the vaccines themselves, then that may be different. And that's also, you know, again, going to be a conversation that you should have with your primary care doctor. And or even when you, if you sign up for the vaccine, I know that when I went, I had an information sheet that I, you know, was basically explain to me, this is what it is. This is what, you know, if you have X, Y, and Z, you may need to pause and stop. And they wanted to kind of confirm to make sure that your doctors were approving of, you know, like saying that it was okay for you to move ahead. So I think that those are the same precautions that I would give, you know, to anyone, you know, the advice. In terms of the pregnancy, as of right now, there have not been reports of adverse side effects for women who have received the vaccine while pregnant. I know that within the actual testing studies, some of the information that we know were in mice, pregnant mice. And as of right now, you know, they have not reported any major adverse events for the mice that were pregnant or their offspring. But, you know, obviously we know that that there could be very different scenarios for each individual human being. And so with everything, there is a calculated risk that we take. There is nothing that is guaranteed to be 100% safe for any of us. But as of right now, I am not aware of any just blanket recommendations that pregnant women should not be taking the vaccine.
Now, Dr. Purnell, I want to end by asking you a different type of question. And to get your feedback. So, and this is, you know, a personal question for me, and I've talked to other college moms who are going through the same thing. So my college son, all of his friends, in the midst of them partying somewhere in the back of my mind, they're like, we'll take the vaccine, give it to us, we'll take it now. What questions should young people be asking? Because they want to take the vaccine just so they can get back out there. And I'm like, but then you should be taking some reflection time. So what questions should young people be thinking about when they're 20, 21, 22 or so, before they just sign up and take it because they want to get back out to their lives?
That's a great question. So what the first thing is that I would make sure that they have, you know, at least gotten some type of annual exams, or have, you know, some type of history with, you know, a primary care provider or something. You know, even as young as early 20s, we may have underlying conditions and you may not even be aware. One of the first things that, you know, you will be asked, even if you get the vaccine, is about, do you have a certain list of conditions? And if you've never been to the doctor, or, you know, haven't been in the last 5 years, you may not even be able to give, you know, like a true answer. You may not know. So that, you know, I think would be the first thing. Am I healthy? You know, how do I know that I'm healthy? Not just by, do I look visibly healthy, but have I, you know, been to the doctor? Have I gotten just routine exams and things that are important anyway? The next question would be, which we know the answer is yes, but we could tell them to ask, does getting the vaccine mean that I can stop all of the other stuff, right? And we know the answer is no, you need to keep doing it, but we could tell them, ask them, you know, because sometimes it's easier when they hear it from someone else, right? Other than mom. And so ask them, you know, about things like, well, what are the types of activities that are, you know, safe for me to still engage in even after I've gotten both doses of the vaccine, right? So that could be one of those types of conversation starters that might be good. One thing that we know is that, that people are recommending that, you know, one dose alone is not sufficient. And meaning, you know, even though sometimes those of us who may be a little bit more of a, I guess, risk taker may go, well, I got one dose. I can start, you know, partying a little bit. No, not actually. You know, they tell us in that window between the first and second dose, we need to still play it as safely as we did before we got the first dose, right? Because we don't have the full immunity. And so, you know, maybe asking questions like, well, what are some things that I should look out for? You know, even after I've gotten that first dose, are there certain things that, you know, I should be looking out for or aware of, or, you know, things of that nature? Again, being young, we think that we are invincible. And while we know that there are some reported side effects, there could still be, you know, some side effects that are in the higher risk category of adverse events that maybe younger adults may not be, you know, thinking about. So, for example, a high fever that lasts for a very long time that doesn't respond to pain medication, you know, over X number of days. Maybe that's the time when you may need to call in and say, hey, am I okay, et cetera. So things like that. The other thing, and perhaps, you know, you can think about, you can tell him I said this part, but maybe he should be asking, how can I help, you know, in the midst of this pandemic? There's so many of our seniors who have expressed to us, you know, at our church, we are developing, you know, like an educational seminar and all of that. And some of the questions that they, that the members have expressed were around scheduling, all of the barriers. If you are not very tech savvy, if you're not, you know, connected to your phone 24/7, like many of us are, how can I help, you know, some of the older adults in my community, in my church, in my neighborhood, or, you know, those who are still very much struggling with trying to keep themselves safe and are scared, you know, to go out and go shopping, are not, you know, is able or capable of doing online shopping, all of those things, you know, what role can I play to really make a difference? And I think, you know, that could be one of those feel good questions and feel good moments. Also, you know, just be thankful for the fact that yeah, we have a vaccine that is available to us, you know, and how can we help others in our communities who may not have received it yet?
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Tangela Purnell, epidemiologist and health services researcher, and assistant professor of cardiovascular disease and clinical epidemiology at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Thank you so much for all of your time and for participating in our COVID vaccination hesitation conversation series.
Absolutely, my pleasure. And you all, please stay safe. We're all in this together. You know, there are questions that we all have. You're asking the right questions. You're doing the right things, you know, going to your trusted sources. The last piece is making sure we're doing all that we can to keep ourselves safe, but also to keep those around us whom we love safe as well. So stay well.
If you have decided not to get the vaccination and you want to share your concerns, email them to todaywithdrk@gmail.com. WEAA, absolutely the voice of the community.